All right, welcome back. Continuing to listen to the weekend edition of the KE Report, and we are continuing to take a broad look at the markets as well as dive into the continued strength in the commodities as we are now chatting with Mike Larson, editor-in-chief at Money Show. And Mike, I want to get right into it, dealing with the general equity markets here. We had a number of commentators who don't necessarily lean on the bearish side end last quarter with the statements that they were a little bit worried about maybe the loss of momentum in markets and really just overall how they thought Q4 could fare. As we're recording this, now it's still midday on Wednesday, but so far the first 3 days of trading this month, or I guess 2 days of trading this month, we've seen a bit of weakness in the morning in the markets, but for the most part being bought back to a certain degree. We're not having an aggressive rollover like we saw to start, let's say, September or even August. But look, these markets are still, well, they're not hitting all-time highs day after day, and we even have something like the VIX holding up in the high teens, even in the 20 area, which I know isn't elevated long-term, but it's higher than the low teens or right around that 10 level that we've seen recently. So, Mike, broad question, are you worried about the markets this month, even this quarter?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we obviously have a couple things floating around there that have people a little uneasy. You know, no one likes to see missiles flying through the air in both directions in the Middle East. And so that's clearly, you know, the oil market's paying a little attention. We had a little bit of pop in oil prices there. Everybody's kind of, you know, watching their screens to see what happens between Israel and Iran. So that, you know, that's causing some concerns. That's giving you a little bit of a volatility pop. Yeah, Jay Powell come on the other day and sort of, you know, try and walk back a little of the pricing, the more aggressive interest rate cut pricing that was going on in the market. So that gave you a little bit of a pop in short-term yields as people sort of depriced a little bit of the Fed. So those are a couple of things that caused some volatility in the last few days. But bigger picture, I mean, you know, all the things that I watch in the corner of my screen or out of the corner of my eye to be like, hey, is there something lurking out there that maybe I'm not paying attention to that I should be paying attention to? Or, you know, is there some kind of thing that's sort of a chink in the armor that you've got to keep an eye out for? And a lot of that, a lot of just from my years in the market, a lot of what I follow is credit based, credit spreads, high yield spreads. Is it, you know, if the equity market's going up, but you're seeing credit risk spreads start to widen out behind the scenes, people aren't paying attention to it. That can be a concern. If you're seeing some of these, you know, other areas of the market, derivatives market and so on, that are getting a little squirrely when the equities market is just throwing a party, you know, that does tend to concern me. But that's the kind of stuff that going back as far as 07, 06, we're telling you, you know, this market's going to be in trouble. But I'm just not seeing that. I mean, you look at the high yield spread, for instance, the difference between borrowing for the average junk bond borrower and underlying treasuries. I mean, that's fallen all the way back to 307 basis points or just over 3 percentage points. You know, when all the bank failure talk was floating around, if we could go back even further to 2022, that number was all the way up to like 5.75, almost 6. The bank failure stuff spiked it to maybe, you know, 450, 475 basis points. But we've just been kind of coming down ever since then. And so that tells you that the credit markets aren't really worried about, you know, debt defaults. The credit markets aren't too concerned about the economic outlook. And Powell may have pushed back a little bit, but do we think he's changing his stripes here and all of a sudden saying, you know what, no more cuts? I mean, of course not. It's more of just, hey, we're going to go 25, we're going to go 25. And the next year, we're probably still going to cut, but we're not going to tell you, hey, we're going to do 50, 75 basis point chunk moves. So don't go betting on that. That's sort of the layman's term way of translating what he had to say, in my opinion. And even the economic data we've gotten has been okay. It's not great. It's consistent, and it has been consistent with that kind of, you know, gentle slowdown, soft landing, whatever. You know, I hate to use that same cliched term, but that is kind of what's going on. So unless and until I see some of those things change, I don't see a reason to overreact. Again, if you're a longer-term investor, I don't see a reason to overact to some of this stuff that's happening. If you're, you know, triple leverage along the S&P and all of a sudden Israel launches a massive attack on Iran, you're going to lose money, let's be honest. But do I think that's going to change the economic outlook for the U.S. big picture? Is it going to change a China that's now throwing stimulus money or going to be throwing stimulus money at its market for quarter after quarter? Is it going to change the, you know, general consensus that defaults are not going to be a big issue in the U.S. economy? You know, I'd say the answer is no, no, and no. or other thing, market sensitive things. Is it going to change the general glide path for the US dollar lower? I don't think so. And so you've got a lot of things that are still, from a macro big picture level, still pretty, if not bullish, at least sanguine and okay for the markets. And I think in that environment, oh yeah, October is notorious for having some chop. I can't say that we're not going to suffer a little bit of that shorter term, but I don't think that longer term, this is a market that's, you know, there's some big, huge, lurking boogeyman out there that we're just not paying attention to.
Well, Mike, another theme that we've seen over the last couple of months is that there has been a widening out in the breadth where more sectors are getting some love from investors. It's not just the mega cap tech stocks. There's actually a lot of sectors doing well under the surface, starting to move. Some of them are rate sensitive sectors. Some of them are even in the value sectors. But when you prepare for the money show and you have all these different speakers and you get all these thought leaders, are there any sectors that people that you talk with are discussing that you think present an opportunity for investors?
Yeah, I appreciate the question because, you know, we all know 9, 12, maybe in as far back as 18 months ago, it was kind of this all tech, all the time market. It was Mag 7. And if you didn't own Magnificent 7 stocks, you're kind of sitting there like poking your portfolio with a stick and wondering why it's not moving. Whereas now you have, you know, the rate sensitive groups. I mean, all of a sudden you've got this utilities, you've got real estate investment trusts that in the latter case have been doing nothing but losing you money or going nowhere for 18 plus months. They're perking up. You've got financials. To go back to credit sensitivity and what's going on in the credit spread market, you don't just have credit spreads generally contracting. You've got financials that are performing very well now and have been for some time. So that's a sector that typically is sort of a canary in a coal mine if you have credit issues. And financial stocks have been going up, so that's good. Obviously, we have groups more recently, you know, gold miners and commodities levered type names that are doing well with a falling dollar and record gold prices and some of the gains we've seen elsewhere in that space. So yeah, there, you know, industrials even too. There's pretty broad-based participation. The small cap rotation, I'd like to see maybe a second leg, and that kind of stalled out a little bit. But, you know, I think it stalled out and gave back some ground, but they didn't completely roll over again. So that's sort of anytime you see a sector make a big move, if it just has sort of a gentle correction to kind of digest those gains and that sort of, you know, build some steam for the next leg up, that's some historical kind of bull market behavior. So as long as that kind of stuff's going on, I think that you can still be positive on this market. As far as things that are opportunistic, I mean, again, you know, hats off to Tom Hayes from Hedge Fund Tips. I had him on our podcast not too long ago. He was banging the drum for China and saying, you know, the valuations are ridiculously cheap. And that's, you know, emerging markets more broadly, but China in particular. Of course, I'm sure he didn't know they were going to come out with this sort of enormous bazooka of aid a couple weeks later. But anybody who listened to that call did really well for themselves. In general, people have, you know, a lot of people that speak at our shows more recently are still pretty positive on energy. And that's a sector that I think, you know, the outlook longer term is pretty solid and obviously is going to probably get a short term pop from some of the concerns about supply, given what's going on in the Middle East. You know, financials, again, to go back to that, that's a sector that people have been talking about. As you know, you make a lot of money in tech. You can always say each one of us has these big companies involved in our daily lives, whether it's Google with search, whether it's Meta with social media, and on, you know, and I think it's hard to say that there's some big, huge trend that's going to change that makes tech unattractive. I just think that tech has had a lot of its run and that people are now looking for alternatives. They've made a ton of money in tech. They don't want to dump it or short it, but they're looking for other opportunities. They're looking for, you know, what can I make in a soft, you know, what tends to outperform in a soft landing, lower interest rate regime where credit concerns aren't too bad. That's beaten up sectors like real estate, and that's things like financials. And I think, you know, to an increasing degree, especially if people buy into the soft landing scenario, which I think the data is telling you is the right play, then small caps that are more levered to the domestic economy and industrials and things like that look pretty good.
Mike, there any historical reference that you have for this market? I feel like talking about this whole soft landing, everyone discredits it, saying we're not going to have a soft landing. Look at all these other times in history when inflation was high and markets crashed and we went into a big recession. What are you comparing this time to in the past?
Look, that's a great question. It's hard for me to answer because I'm not going to sit here and tell you I was investing in the markets in the mid to late 1970s. I was born in 1975. So that was my market experience. I was born into this world. So I can't tell you you know, as an investor, oh, this reminds me of the 81, 82 post inflationary scenario, the Ronald Reagan, you know, revolution and the huge market gains that came after that. But what I can say is that if you look at what happened back then, again, not speaking from personal experience, but kind of historical, look at what happened from back then. Once you got inflation under control, once you got some of the geopolitical stuff, if not under control, at least kind of moving to the back burner, once you got a policy that was, if not standing in the way of the markets, at least not hurting them, all these kind of things that went into it, you know, you had a great run for equities. You had a great run overall. And so I guess you could maybe say, again, not from personal experience, but from sort of economic parallels, what happened in the early 80s, I think it isn't a bad way to look at things, or especially, you know, as you got more of the peace dividend moving forward. I just think that investors have to keep in mind, I think a lot of investors are still shell-shocked or still have the muscle memory of the great financial crisis. And then after that, some of these other crises that they, you know, what we had happen with interest rates in 2022 and, you know, kind of everything falling and so on. And they can't just say, you know what, sometimes things don't stink. I got to find something else that stinks. And I think, to be honest, I think some of it goes back to just like the political, the way some people are so polarized and set in their ways. And they want to think, you know, the stuff that goes on in the political world is why they can't buy stocks because everything's terrible. Because I don't like the guy who's in office now, and I don't like the person who's going to come in, whether that's, you know, or the woman that's going to come in. So they're so hardened by some of these political and other things that they just can't open their eyes or their minds to, hey, maybe, you know, as an investor, that stuff matters in the background. But as an investor, what's your primary goal? It's to make money. It's to check your biases and your worries at the door and try and be as analytical and as, you know, unpassioned as possible, and just look at things through an objective eye. And when you do, I don't see reasons to be freaking out. I see reasons to be, you know, optimistic, and I see opportunities to make money. So you can worry about that stuff. You can, you know, have your political views, and you can have your, you know, other biases or whatever in your regular life. But as an investor, what should you do? Check that stuff at the door. When you turn your computer on, or, you know, you open your app and you want to trade stocks, don't, you know, let that other stuff get in the way. Look at things, you know, in an unpassioned, dispassionate basis and make money.
Yeah, Mike, some great cogent points there about being an investor versus all the biases people bring into their daily life. But you brought up the political situation in the U.S., and it is tenuous with both sides, you know, at each other's throats. But when you think about it from just an investing standpoint, they do have very different, both candidates, very different economic policies and areas of the markets that may be impacted. Do you think there's any market sectors that would be a boon to investors based on either candidate, or maybe sectors that you would avoid based on either candidate winning?
Yeah, I think, you know, we've talked to a lot of experts. I've followed a lot of the work of the experts we have speaking for us. And I think there's a general consensus that, you know, energy prices would likely, and therefore energy stocks, ironically enough, maybe not perform as well under a Trump administration because of the drill, baby, drill type approach. If you're trying to flood the market with supply, then, you know, you're going to get lower prices. So it's ironic that the energy companies may face less regulation, but they also may be in an environment where overproduction, or, you know, a huge pop in production is kind of the goal of what's going on in Washington. On the other side, you know, in Harris administration, it's interesting to see if any of this housing type stuff gets passed, or if, you know, more infrastructure spending gets passed. That would tend to support maybe those kinds of sectors. You know, so there's a little talk about that. I think that stuff tends to smooth itself out over time. And I think, is, you know, when you look at the historical data, the best kind of market performing outcome going back decades is when you have a split administration. So regardless of whether it's Trump or Harris in the White House, I think the thing that Wall Street's going to be focusing on is how do things shake out in Congress. If you have, you know, a Democratic president and a Republican-led Congress, or vice versa, that tends to be more of the gridlock scenario, which markets historically like. So I think that's another part of it that gets talked about a little bit less, but I think you do want to keep an eye on, because if you're looking for data versus just sort of, you know, opinion, that tends to be the best scenario. So if you get that kind of that result after November, but I think that would probably be the most bullish scenario from a Wall Street standpoint.
Let's go back over to China, because you mentioned the opportunity that a couple speakers have outlined to you, but also, more importantly, the stimulus that China keeps injecting into their market. They say it's not stimulus. They say they're just trying to help out their housing market. But look, easier money, cheaper money, all scream stimulus to me. How worried are you about China broadly, potentially just going through this slowdown that lasts a while? Or do you think there is that huge opportunity there that trickles into other markets because of how much easier they are with monetary policy right now?
Well, look, I mean, I think China in real estate in particular probably is, you know, a few years into a multi-year kind of bearish type environment, just given, I mean, we all know about the ghost cities. We can see what's happening. We know that there was, you know, obvious extreme overinvestment in one sector. That's going to take a long time to sort that out. But if you sort that out with government money that's preventing banks from failing and that's, you know, helping people, helping convert underused property and development into things like assisted living or affordable housing or whatever, I mean, there's things they can do that they seem to be finally dedicated to doing that can, at least from a market standpoint, put people's mind at ease. You know, does that mean the Chinese real estate market is going to boom starting 6 months from now? Of course not. But even if you have enough money thrown at a problem and enough effort thrown at a problem that it at least pushes it to the back burner, then the rest of the market can do okay. And I think, you know, I would say it's instructive what's happening in CRE here in the U.S., commercial real estate here in the U.S. We had, what, an 18 to 24 month period where everybody's talking about nobody's going back to the office and nobody's going to go to a shopping mall. And outside of warehouse, everything else is terrible and properties are losing value and, you know, people are going to lose money on commercial mortgage backed securities and this, that, and the other. Well, guess what happened? We've had a couple of years where those stocks have underperformed because of those worries. You had some of those banks failing in 2023 because of those worries. But what's happening now? Rates are coming down, credit tightening. If you look at the Fed's own data on whether banks are being tighter or looser with commercial real estate loans, for three quarters in a row now, they've actually been slightly less tight and getting less tight. So the lenders are saying the worst of this is behind us. So what's happening? Those stocks that have done nothing are going up, and the rest of the market no longer was held hostage to every, ooh, scary commercial real estate disaster headline. So, you know, that's what happened here. China's problem is much bigger, but I think once you move a problem that is well known from being in front of the market's face or an investor's face every single day, and you just sort of say, look, it's going to take time, it's going to take money, it's going to take government aid, they're going to deal with it, and you push it off the front page, then you know what? It improves sentiment and people start being willing to look at bargains. So are we massively overdone in terms of the magnitude of this increase in Chinese stocks? Probably, for sure. I mean, you know, it's been a huge move in a short period of time. But could this finally be the thing that, and not just in the short term, but over, you know, a turning of a battleship kind of picture, could this be saying that longer term tells people, maybe I'm going to get back into emerging markets. Maybe I'm going to buy less U.S. and more China or more international, especially with a dollar that's going down, a Fed that's cutting rates, and, you know, these other things that tend to benefit foreign stocks? Yeah, I think it probably is.
Well, Mike, let's also shift over to the commodity sector, because obviously China is a huge player. It doesn't really matter which commodity you're talking about. The U.S. is obviously still the biggest economy, but it's a global scene. So when you look at things like the metals, when you look at things like gold and silver, having a pretty good run all year. But then even recently, the pickup in copper, I think, is notable. It's back above 460. I don't know if that ties into the, I guess, bullish nature on Chinese real estate improving or even the U.S. real estate markets improving as rates come down. But how are you looking things like the precious metals, but also copper?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still very bullish precious metals. You know, that's been going back for a couple of years. We've talked about it, and I don't see anything that changes there. Again, you know, we've had a little bit of a volatility in the short term as people sort of buy protection for what's happening in the Middle East, and then maybe they sell it if it's not going to be as bad. And Powell comes out one day and talks tough after not talking tough a few days before that. You know, there's some of that shorter term stuff going on. But longer term, I think the bull case there is very much intact. On the industrial side of things, you know, you get a soft landing scenario that more people accept for the U.S., and you throw in some Chinese stimulus that doesn't mean hundreds of new cities are going to be going up every 6 months like they can, you know, or buildings every 6 months like we had in the last commodity super cycle. But at least if you take the scenario off the table that nothing's ever going to get built again and so on because of government aid, well, guess what? Same kind of dynamic. You know, I think so. I still favor probably precious over base, but I can see a case, no pun intended, I can see a base case for base metals where you remove the China's never going to build another building for the rest of its life scenario, and you also have a soft landing in the U.S., all else being equal, that would tend to support that. And I think something like silver, which kind of straddles the commodity or the precious and industrial world, might even be one of the best alternatives of all.
Well, silver's been that one that, in a way, has kind of been lagging that gold move. You still look at that gold to silver ratio standing at about 84, 85 right now. It's been choppy throughout this year. What about filtering down into the equities then, Mike? Do you see potentially even bigger opportunity there when you look at something like GDX that right now is trending higher, threatening a almost decade, over a decade long breakout if it can break out from that 2020 high?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. You know, it's again, something like silver, I think, looks pretty darn attractive here. I think that the equities, the more people believe in this scenario, and the more you can at least get some momentum on the base side of things versus it all being precious or gold as it's been for a little while, then I think that's kind of the missing ingredient for some of these equities. So, you know, there's a reason gold's been moving. There's a reason to expect some of these other companies are going to be moving as well. I think that with the credit environment not being so negative, again, I think at the riskier end of the spectrum with some of the juniors, then yeah, that's probably helpful there as well. So I have a lot of reasons to believe that the move we've seen is just, you know, is not the ninth inning. It's probably the third or fourth of some of these companies. So yeah, in.
Well, Mike, let's also just squeeze in energy. You've already mentioned it a couple times that there's a couple different dynamics here at play. But in particular, we keep getting a lot of questions about nat gas. We are getting closer to winter again. People have it in their sights. They know the sunny months are over, and those months where you need to heat your home are here. What do you think the outlook is for both oil and nat gas?
You know, I'm not going to pretend to be an expert in kind of the some of the subsectors and in particular natural gas. So I'll probably gently beg off a little bit there, other than to say, you know, you've got a lot of weather-driven volatility in that market. But I think that in general, in a relatively positive overall energy market where you've got U.S. exports that, depending on who is in the White House, maybe are more friendly to exporting gas and, you know, in LNG form and so on. And supplying the world with it, I think that's a positive part of the market as well. So without, again, extreme sort of nitty-gritty knowledge of that market, I would just say yes, it fits into my overall bullish slash positive outlook for that sector.
So, Mike, taking a step back, sounds like you're seeing a lot of opportunity in these markets. How do you go about diversifying, or what do you hear at the Money Show conferences about diversifying or truly focusing on one or two of these markets?
You know, it'll be interesting to see. We've got the Orlando events coming up October 17th to 19th. So that's kind of our next big gathering. And that's one of the broad trade shows that has a broader audience as opposed to maybe the high net worth focus where we have only a couple hundred people for in certain cities. So it's going to be interesting to see how it goes. We've got programming for a little bit of everything. I think there is definitely more, a little bit more metals focused than we've had in terms of a couple more exhibitors, a couple more speakers that are talking about that because people want to know. So we've got that going on. Tech is still interesting, I think, to people. I think it's always going to be just because there's good stories to tell, and it doesn't help hurt when you have good stories to tell and people have generally made money as well. But I think it'll be interesting to see what people have to say when I'm interacting with attendees and speakers. But in general, again, there is clear focus on the election and what it might mean in the short term. There is, again, people have strongly held beliefs there in terms of, you know, who's going to win or who they want to win and what that means for their portfolio. It'll be interesting to see, you know, especially as we sort that out and we finally know just who's there, regardless of which side, whether it's Harris or Trump, just knowing that answer might remove some uncertainty and give us the kick for a year-end rally. So there's a little bit of optimism about that floating out there too.
Man, still a lot of optimism in these markets. As I mentioned, a few of our commentators were coming on at the tail end of last month, worried about the markets, but these traders can switch on a dime. There was a little bit of a loss of momentum. We'll see where the next couple months take us with the election and with another Fed meeting. Look, Powell tried to temper expectations of very consistent rate cuts, but he also said that we will continue to cut rates. This is all lining up for what seems like a fairly good environment. The backdrop being we still need to see decent economic data and inflation staying somewhat under control. All a lot for us to talk about as we progress through this year. But Mike, we're out of time for the radio show this weekend. Thank you, as always, for joining us. Again, Mike Larson, editor-in-chief at Money Show. Click the link in the show notes to visit the Money Show website. And Mike, I hope you have a great rest of your weekend. Everybody, thanks for tuning in. Thanks for taking time on your weekend to listen to our show. And please be sure to go back through our website, KEReport.com and podcast and YouTube channels. Search The KE Report to listen to all our daily editorials and company updates. I hope you all have a great rest of your weekend.
Great. Thank you, Corey.